Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. And here we are. It's a new year, 2023. For a while, I didn't think we were going to make it to here. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So today, Carol and I were thinking, trying to decide, and we do this, this is a process we go through, I'll share it with you. What would the audience be most interested in? But more than that, what general health focus do we think next year will be focused on? And we discussed it, and we really believe that next year is about the title of a book that a naturopath wrote. I think it phrases it correctly, Younger You. I think we've always been focused on our youth, always, and maintaining health as long as we can. We find that it's very interesting because, yes, we are living longer than we used to. But at the same time, there's a curve and there's a graph. Whereas people, ancient people, used to live till 50 years old and then...
Less. Even just after childbirth, after you had your children, you were done. You were, you reached your usefulness.
And then you would die.
Yeah.
Whereas,
Corinne, you're a little hard for me to hear. Could you get a little closer to your microphone?
Thank you.
Okay. Yep, thanks.
Is that better?
Yes, much. Thank you.
Okay. And so what we're finding with our population is that we're living into our 70s, and at about 63, we're starting to get chronic diseases of aging.
We have a shorter health span.
Exactly.
The years that we spend being healthy are diminished. So we have an average life expectancy, isn't it somewhere in the high 70s, 78, 79? And
16 years of that health span, or that lifespan, is ill health, where we're getting chronically going lower and lower and lower with less ability to function, less ability to maintain our health. And that's a very important piece because, well, we could say the younger you that we want to live till 120, but what I really want to do is live till I die. It's interesting because I told you last week that my mother died this year, and you heard her on the radio about
that. Right. It's amazing.
Bright alert. 2 months ago, I was in the middle of one of those word games on the apps on my phone, and I couldn't figure it out. I copied the page, sent it to my mother 2 months ago.
Uh-huh.
She lived till she died. She was bright. She was alert. She was functioning. It was a big joke in our family. If we wanted to remember anything, we would call Mom, and she knew it. She knew all the details, everything. She lived till she died. And that's what we want for all of us. It would be wonderful to live to 100, but if we don't, we want to live till we die, and we want to live at the highest quality of life that we can. And this book, Younger You, gives us a pathway to that. So it's pretty exciting. Now, you read this book, Carol. Where should we begin?
Well, this is kind of a torturous thing, why I got interested in it. Kara Fitzgerald is an MD, and she spoke at the A4M meeting. I didn't hear her, but I got really curious because somebody else did and was talking about this Himalayan Tartary buckwheat as something really, like a really one of the best foods and concentrated nutrition. So I decided to get her book, and I found that her book was much more than I anticipated. And she's delving into an area that we really haven't covered very much, I think, over the years, and it's methylation. But let's give out the phone number right now, because we do want people to participate. 212-209-2877.
That's 212-209-2877. Yeah, we would like you to participate. This is a subject that we all are thinking about and concerned about. It doesn't start when we're older. It could start when we're quite young. As a matter of fact, the research that she did, the reason why this book is so interesting and so so compelling is because this is the first multifactorial study that's ever been done on aging. Usually you see one factor, you know, well, we increase your B vitamins and then something happens, or we increase fish oils, then something happens, and the result, and we chart it. But this is the first study that's ever been done that has a very complete look at how we change our lives to a degree that literally changes our gene expression. And she documents it all in this book. Go on, Carol.
Yeah, we have different aging clocks, and these are based on different theories of aging. What are aging markers? Is there something that turns on specifically? Is there a rate? Oh, the telomeres. We've talked about telomere length on our DNA before. We had a very good interview with Dave Wojnarowski, remember? Yeah. On this telomere length. But this is this aging clock that she got involved with is DNA methylation. So what's methylation? One of the things that it is a powerful detoxification system for your body, but it's actually much more. It's a single carbon group that attaches to molecules, some for excretion, but it also, as it turns out, is these methyl groups, these tiny one carbon little pieces of our essence, sit on our DNA. And we had all this great anticipation when we first got the information that we can figure out our genetic makeup. We now know what the human makeup of our DNA, and you can have yourself tested for your variabilities, and you partially have it tested in Ancestry.com and 23andMe. Do some of that. But as it turns out, the DNA itself is not so important as these methylation groups or what happens to your DNA. And it's called epigenetics, or it's the environment. It's everything that we do, that we eat. It's our ancestry, because these things can actually be carried over with your DNA. It's sort of mind-blowing. The more I read, the more I go, wow, I really haven't put that much credence in all of this and that much thought. So Kara Fitzgerald put together a study with changing people's diets and some of the things that they might be doing, some of the things, relaxation, meditation, whatever. She had a whole program for people to do, and she continues this in her practice even now. And they found that after, I think it was a relatively short time, like 8 weeks or so, they made a significant difference in that aging clock with the DNA methylation. It was actually quite stunning.
In the clock, in the biological age. Now, we all have a chronological age. I have my age, and my mother had 100. But there's a biological age, and that's the age that in which we function as. And so they did two identical twins, and one twin was born 5 minutes before the other, so he was older. Well, when they looked at the biological age, the older twin was 13 years older than the younger twin, biologically speaking. So he was functioning at a point of 13 years older than his literally younger brother. So what they're looking at and how they're evaluating this is biological age. Now, the part that I find so interesting and is so much of this book is what we've been talking about the whole year. You know, we've been talking about epigenetics, but the relationship of how the epigenetics affect gene expression was so dramatically explained in this book. It was almost like a wow, I never understood it to that degree. The book was written as, when you hear Kara Fitzgerald talk, it was written for lay people, so we all can read it and understand it. But it focuses us to another level of health. And the thing about her study that was so profound is that she was dealing with a bit younger, 40 to 52 age group, but she was also dealing with people that were relatively healthy. And even with that age group who had a consciousness of health and were none of them had chronic diseases that had been identified at that point, even with that group, they were able to reduce in 8 weeks the biological age by 2.32 years. And that was statistically significant. She feels if she was dealing with a population that wasn't healthy, she would get even a higher result in terms of the turnaround. And it's a complete program. And it's quite exciting because, just like I said, it's everything we've been talking about, Carol, for the whole year. How many of us understand epigenetics? We've been speaking about this for the whole year. But epigenetics are literally molecules that sit on the DNA, and they can turn on or turn off genes. So I remember when we went into, the whole country went into a panic after Angela Jolie brought up brought to focus that there was the BRCA genes, and those with the BRCA genes had a very high incidence of breast cancer and blah, 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 went on and on. But when you look at the statistics and when you look at people from not that long ago, and you look at their incidence of cancer, even with a positive BRCA gene, it was significantly lower. It was in an almost normal level. And what are we looking at? We're looking at people who were not exposed to pesticides to the degree that we are now, who lived a different type of lifestyle, a healthier lifestyle, didn't have the same junk foods. Generally, our population was not obese to the degree that we are now. And so what was happening is that the epigenetics of our lifestyle at that time were turning on the suppressor genes that in our lifestyle, as we live it today, those suppressor genes very often are turned off. She mentions that it's really interesting to study this phenomena in relationship to cancer, because it's been so well studied. It's like putting the pieces together on a puzzle.
Carol? Interesting. It ties into the microbiome, and I think we should go through what the diet or what kind of foods you should eat, because she believes that foods are even more potent than supplements. And there are supplements that can increase your methylation. But for instance, the B vitamins, B1, B2, B12, biotin, B6, vitamin K, PABA, they are all methyl donors, meaning that's a rich source of the methylation groups for your DNA. And as it turns out, our microbiome can make those for us. And particularly a probiotic called Lactobacillus plantarum, which is in many products, is supposed to be very effective at making folate. And folate is probably preeminent methyl donor, and it's got its own cycle. And I'd like to warn here that she says, don't use folic acid. It's a synthetic, and it really doesn't go into that folate remodeling very well. What we need to do, folinic acid or tetrafolate, what is it? L-tetrafolate is one name for it. So this is molecules that occur in your body naturally. Folic acid does not. And we may recall that they started putting folic acid in prenatal vitamins because they know that lack of folic acid or folate, not the folic acid, helps prevent birth defects. And it was a big deal to finally put something on labels that would state that this is important for a healthy childbirth. So we've been talking about the microbiome on and off on this show. So this ties into it very nicely. And I'd like to go into a situation that I've been looking at. I follow some Facebook groups where women are perimenopausal, menopausal, and they have great issues with symptoms of all sorts. And this also ties into another interview we did with Dr. Michael Platt, if you can recall. He wrote a book about adrenaline. We sort of get mixed up a little bit. Adrenaline dominant. So we get mixed up a little bit with cortisol and adrenaline, both of these coming out of the adrenal gland for your fight and flight reaction. But it's the adrenaline that makes your heart pound. And if you don't get rid of it, it can persist and cause panic attacks and heart pounding and trips to the emergency room. Well, the hormone progesterone helps balance that effect of adrenaline, but often adrenaline is going high because of another imbalance in our insulin and glucose. And my goodness, how many times have we talked on this show about the importance of insulin resistance and how rampant it is? So your body creates this extra adrenaline. Mm-hmm. The other thing that happens is that women get to a situation where they have these symptoms. They have weight gain, breast tenderness, their thyroid function goes down. Some of the weight gain is associated with that. So that metabolically, they're very sluggish. They have no energy. They have trouble thinking, on and on and on and on. And what we've discovered was just a little bit of progesterone, but not enough progesterone, makes all these things worse. And one of the things that happens is estrogen is even more sensitized, probably at the receptor, but there's not been a huge amount of research in this area. It's even this one Facebook group calls it estrogen kickback when you add progesterone. If you go into this situation with all these estrogen symptoms, you need enough progesterone to overcome that. But some of these symptoms, the heart pounding, the panic, can't sleep, may actually be a adrenaline component. So this I found this very interesting. A couple things is that methylation that we're just talking about is absolutely needed to metabolize adrenaline. So if these symptoms are persistent, your body's simply not getting rid of it adequately. And funny enough, these same methyl groups are also needed to metabolize estrogen. So you get 2-methoxy, estradiol, and estrone, and 4 and 16. And all of these are really important estrogens and have a lot to do with not accumulating a lot of estrogen. So then another little piece of this puzzle was, if you're high adrenaline, it's very difficult for progesterone to get to its receptors inside the nucleus and actually do what it's supposed to do. So the bottom line is, women with all these symptoms are getting some relief from progesterone, but it takes a great deal of progesterone to overcome all that. And so as I read this book, I'm now thinking, I wonder if we really need to focus on diet changes, as Kara Fitzgerald put together here, to solve some of those perimenopause and menopause symptoms. So it's kind of an eye-opener for me. I think this has possibility.
Whenever women come into my office for hormone balance or regulation, I do work on diet. I do work on making sure their bowels are working. I do. It's not just a bunch of creams that get rubbed on. They walk in and then walk out with creams. It's a full program, and that program is essential for health. And so what you're talking about is an understanding that it's not one thing. It's how they all go together. And I can't repeat enough on how this program puts together everything that we've been saying up to now over and over again all year long, from the epigenetics, from the intestines, from exercise, from sleep, the whole group of factors which create a different expression on genes. One of the things she says are our genes are not determinant of our health. It's our epigenetics which then create that determination, and that we think of all the expression, genetic expression, the majority of it takes place at birth. But in actuality, as we get older and as our genes, as we begin to age, this epigenetic factor is so essential for our ability, and it's intensive for our ability to balance our body and our health and our mental stability and our metabolism and our energy and our focus. I can't go on enough on how these epigenetics play their part in keeping us healthy. And some of it, and a large portion of it, is the methyl B12 and the tetrahydrofolate. But there's another piece of it, and we've been talking about this also, is there is an adaptogenic part of it. And that's with food and herbs that create this beautiful balance that allows our body to express itself in an optimal way. So let's go to the diet that she's talking about, and you're going to...
Okay, let's just skip out the phone number again quickly. 212-209-2877. Please give us a call and join the conversation.
Yes, definitely. I know you have something to say. And I know you've been thinking about this. There's no
okay.
In my mind.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the foods. What? How do we eat?
Well, she talks about. She gives general guidance. She talks about organic is preferred over conventional. She makes a big point of staying hydrated, which Dr. Deckel did last week on how important hydration is. He said that if you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated. And to a minimum of 3%, which works out to quite a bit of fluid. She also does this minimal intermittent fasting. Minimal. She says, don't eat between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. So that's 12 hours, 12 and 12. So she also doesn't believe in snacking at all. And she also, she says, include healthy oils. And that would be fish oils, different fish oils, coconut oil, olive oil, flaxseed oil, pumpkin seed oil. She includes pumpkin seed oil. That's very interesting. She says this is really essential. She sees changes. She sees changes that last for weeks from one high sugar meal.
Oh, that was a really important point.
Exactly.
We talk about insulin glucose, and that, of course, goes up and down in a relatively short period of time. But she started looking at other markers in your body, and that impact can last for days on other metabolic functions. So that was quite eye-opening.
Exactly.
So no more just sugar snacks.
it's not benign. And so she said avoid added sugar, candy. She says avoid dairy, all dairy. This is her diet. She also avoids grains, all grains. And she avoids legumes, that's beans. She feels that beans are relatively good for you. And in where you have the blue zone, people who live to 100 or beyond 100 years old, they eat quite a few legumes. They eat quite a few beans. But she feels for the sake of this study, she wanted insulin down. So she removed legumes, but then would go back to them. And she made a big deal about do not use plastic food containers. You know, styrofoam and plastic food containers.
Uh-huh. Baggies.
Mm-hmm. And then per week, she says 3 servings of liver at 3 ounces. She likes it organic if possible. And young, if possible, young young calves if possible. And she says, you do the best you can. If you can't tolerate it, you can't tolerate it. But there are capsules that you can take, which are, you don't want the defatted liver. You want the whole fat liver capsule. And you take those instead of eating the liver. And then
she says it's a rich form of all these B vitamins, which are methylators.
And copper.
Also a rich source of iron and copper, which mm-hmm. we've been talking about a bit.
Mm-hmm. She also said 5 to 10 eggs a week.
Uh-huh.
And she says organic, free range. And that's ideal.
Okay, let's talk about the choline, because it's the egg yolk that has choline, which is a very important methylator itself, and it's a precursor in your body. Your body will change it to betaine, also a methylator. And this betaine part of this molecule is also found in beets in large amounts. And interesting enough, this betaine and beets play into the NO, nitric oxide protection, that we were just talking about not so long ago with Beth Shirley. So there's all of these connecting things. So it's the egg yolk that's really very important for the methylation in this case.
But you really can't absorb or take it in without some of the white. You can't take in the white,
right.
the proteins of the yolk and the white of the egg if you don't have the yolk. So you've got this synergy that works together in terms of your ability to absorb and take these in. Eggs are one of the best sources of protein in the world. Where you have quite poor people, they get more than adequate proteins when they have chickens, and the world has chickens. And let me finish up this quickly, the diet. She says 4 teaspoons or 1/4 cup of sunflower seeds or sunflower seed butter, which surprised me, but because I always thought sunflower seeds were not that good for you in relationship to their oils, but she finds them very, very good. And 1 serving methylation adaptogens, and that's 1/2 cup of berries, 1/2 teaspoon rosemary, 1/2 teaspoon turmeric, 2 medium garlic cloves, 2 cups of green tea brewed for 10 minutes. So that's a strong green tea. 3 cups of oolong tea brewed for 10 minutes. 6 ounces of animal protein. And grass-fed, pasteurized, organic, and hormone and antibiotic-free. And 2 servings of low glycemic fruit. She says one of the great methylators are greens, and she doesn't count iceberg lettuce or romaine lettuce greens. She counts arugula, mustard green, kale. And she's big on kale.
Yep.
And those, and the deeper the color, the more benefit you get. She adds beets to her her protocol also. Again, that's, the beets are what we were talking about in terms of the NO and the benefits of beets. A lot has to do with the NO. And how it all comes together. Carol?
She uses beets daily, and she likes pickled beets, but mm-hmm. you can also get it in the products that do promote NO production. And then I used to get crystallized beet juice, which was actually quite nice. You could, you know, just have a spoonful of that in water or your smoothie to cover all this beet stuff. So I found that very interesting how important beet was. Another supplement that she talks about in some details, quercetin. And we hear a lot about quercetin. It has a nice antihistamine effect. It can lower cholesterol, protects against viruses. Who doesn't want that, right? Mm-hmm. And it also wards off aging. So it helps optimize the genetic expression. And we talked about the methylation groups, but it's also possible to have too many methyl groups as well as too little. So you want to get somewhere in between it. But even on the same gene, you can have this lopsided situation where a gene that might be protective, like tumor necrosis factor and protecting you from cancer, it can get over-methylated and get blocked when you really want it. And some of these herbal things and some of the foods we talked about, not just supply methyl groups, but it also is an adaptogen, helping sort out where there's too much, too little, and doing DNA, helping your body have DNA repair. So some of these foods and supplements are really important.
So here we have, isn't it interesting, Carol? Everything we've said today so far, except the evaluation of them, everything we've said so far today is what we've been talking about all year long and how to maintain health and be healthy. And that is quite affirming. We've been on the right track, and hopefully those that listen to us have also been on the right track. She talks about people, you know, people all the time talk about chronic allergies. And she talks about turning around chronic allergies with this form of diet and balancing out gene expression. She also talks about autoimmune diseases. She talks a lot about rheumatoid arthritis and how it's turned around through diet and through incorporating these adaptogenic herbs and foods into the diet. And then she added a few other things. She added she wants a minimum of 7 hours a night of sleep. She said, you know, don't stay up binge watching. Think about, no, I need to get my sleep and go to bed on time. She also talks about she wants 10 minutes twice a day of meditation or quiet time where you just sit quietly in the morning and in the evening and focus your mind or not focus it, just let it go and relax and meditate. And she also talks about exercise, but not excessive, just regular long walks, bicycle rides, things that aren't totally strenuous, but yet get our bodies in motion. She talks about how when she meets people who are not healthy, she said most of them, they don't exercise, they don't get adequate sleep, or they can't sleep. Their mind they can't focus their mind.
Corinne, we have a caller waiting.
Terrific. Hi. Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How can we help you?
This is Bruce Lipton. Have you heard that name?
Bruce Lipton, yes.
He wrote a book called Biology of Belief.
And yes.
biology of what? I'm sorry.
We need the caller to speak up a little more.
Okay.
Sorry to hear.
I'm talking into my phone. I'm right on it.
Okay.
Biology of belief. And as for diet, you know, my takeaway is everybody, beyond some fundamentals, of course, assuming you're not living on candy bars, you're eating your vegetables, you're getting your kale, your broccoli and leek, certain things. I know someone who cannot tolerate apple cider vinegar. It gets very ill. And whether you should eat meat or not, people are different, so different. That is my observation. For me, if you remember Carl Fredericks, beef liver. Yes, that was a good one. So, you have comment on that?
Well, Carlton Fredericks always talks about beef liver, always spoke about beef liver. And yes, she does allow for variations in diet. She has put together also a completely vegetarian diet that she's just publishing. It's been put up on her website. So although she hasn't done a study on it yet, these studies are, although they're short in their duration, which is 8 weeks, they're very long in putting people together, to put 50 people together and to get the financing to do the blood tests and look at the DNA and the epigenetic connections on the DNA becomes very expensive. So she hasn't done another study.
Corinne, we have 3 more callers.
Oh, that's terrific. Hi.
Hello,
so
how are you?
We answered your question. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to both of you. A first thing I want to say is how much I greatly appreciate you and your show and your openness to receive phone calls from the listeners. I greatly appreciate that because
it's fun for us.
Yeah, health is challenging for us right now. My question is, I find they always speak about drinking a lot of water. And I find that now that I've matured, it's very difficult not to run to the restroom every time I drink, let's say, a bottle of water. And I wanted to find out if you have any suggestions or have read any books about perhaps strengthening the lower pelvic area muscles, that sort of thing. And I would have loved to have you offer this particular book as a premium.
So one of the things that helps with your body's hydration, when you drink water, to make sure you add some minerals, so an electrolyte product of some sort, and it actually helps your body hold on to the water. So you can be drinking water all day long, and if there's not enough minerals, it just goes right through. Go right to the washroom with it, and your tissues aren't taking it up. So that would be an important thing. And then we had Dana Cohen on our show, and she had a book on hydration, and she for sure loves juicing vegetables and some fruits, because when you have the water together with some of the nutrition of the vegetables, you get better hydration. Your body can hang on to it better.
There are ways also, and this is in that hormones, particularly testosterone, used vaginally can strengthen the walls, the vaginal walls, which puts more pressure on the urethra and you have more control. So it's a combination of the types of fluids that you drink as well as some hormone balance. But then another wonderful piece of this, and it's really quite amazing the kind of response you get, are Kegels.
Yes, that's what
you
just say.
Tighten your vaginal muscle mm-hmm. and then let it go and tighten and let go. And you could do it 100 times a day. You could do it. You could tighten and let go every time you see a green light in the city. And in a little while, shortly, you'll look up and see a green light, and then you'll realize, oh, I need to be doing my Kegels, and you'll realize that you're already doing it because it becomes
your
a
health.
Trigger.
Your there you go again.
Yeah, let's go on to the next caller.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to both you and Carol. I'm so
Thank
glad
you.
That you put this show on as all the other shows. I appreciate y'all, and I'm glad that you did this. Any information that you can get or give to us about this presentation that you're doing, books or websites or anything else, I would greatly appreciate it. And I ordered 4 of your nitric oxide from your previous show. I'm still waiting for it. Hopefully they'll send it soon. And I'd like to order anything that you might have for today.
Well, okay. Right this now, is last okay. minute. Maybe we can bring Kara on. I just finished the book, so I haven't followed up with trying to contact her.
Okay.
So today we don't really have a premium, but we will shortly. And maybe we could use this book as a premium, like Carol said. So we're going to try to contact her because what she wrote about was so basic and so eye-opening, it just knocked us both over.
And it sounds doable.
Yes, it's very doable. She made it as physically easy as possible. And what she found is that she feels that people as they get older will benefit even more from this protocol than people in their 40s who are healthy. And she also feels that people who are not healthy will benefit even more from this protocol. But she's trying to put together studies showing that. So that's her hypothesis. Now we need a study.
Well, thank you, ladies. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're hoping that the NO gets out to you. BAI is working on it, and we're doing it as quickly as possible. So thank you. Thank you for your support.
Yep. We should have another caller.
Hi. You're live on BAI.
Hello. Good afternoon and Happy New Year. And thank you for all that
you
do.
Happy New Year
to you.
Thank you.
Interestingly, I just heard this morning an environmentalist, a medical doctor who works as an environmental doctor about breast cancer for women, although probably applies to men too, stating that 99% of breast cancers had nothing to do with heredity. Therefore, it's all up to us. Well, not all, but a lot of it is up to us in terms of the environmental situations that we find ourselves in and controlling food. And I was wondering, have you heard that? Does that ring true to you?
I heard 95%. Dr. Chuck Simone said 95%. Only 5% of breast cancers are determinant, and 95% are based on genes. And now what your doctor was saying is another piece of that puzzle is that 5% can be mediated by diet and lifestyle. So now we're down to 1%, which is really a dramatic statement on the power that we have to maintain our own health. It's really exciting and empowering to hear that.
Exactly.
I'm glad he brought that up. Pardon?
Yeah, because I feel like we should be, we should get a megaphone and stand on the rooftop, because I just don't think that's known. And
it's not understood. You
know, right. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. And thank you again for all that you guys do.
Carol.
People are concerned about the stimulation effect of estrogen and estrogen being pro-growth. But if you're methylating your estrogens the way you should be, and here we have lots of tools in Kara Fitzgerald's book, there should be no excess stimulation of anything. So that particular theory about estrogen being dangerous, either your own or supplemental estrogen, does not have to exist. And there are books about this too. One is a book called Estrogen Matters, which really is saying that estrogen has nothing to do with breast cancer necessarily. And there are women who really do need some estrogen and suffer badly if they don't get supplementation. But if they have this history in their family of breast cancer, as you mentioned, or they themselves had previous cancer treatment, they are in this very, very unpleasant quality of life with no estrogen to do all the wonderful things estrogen does. So that's really, really important. So having the so-called history does not mean that if you find yourself in a low estrogen state that you need to continue to suffer.
Carol, mm-hmm. It's been
that's great
an hour.
News.
Thank you for your question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much again, women, ladies.
Thank you.
To all of us. So, Carol, it's been an hour.
My amazing.
Goodness. And we just sped right through it because the topic was just so very interesting. So I want to thank all of you who called in and shared your thoughts and your questions because it really helps us and gives us focus. And thank you for your support. I want to wish you and your family a very happy new year. I didn't get to wish Carol a happy new year.
Thank you. You too,
Carol. And so here we go. We'll be back next week. Thank you for spending this hour with us. If you have any thoughts on a topic you'd like us to discuss, we'd love to hear it because we would absolutely love to bring it up with you. So please, you can put it on our Facebook page, Take Charge of Health with Corinne and Carol, and we'll be glad to respond. So thank you again, Reggie, for your help, and we will be back next week.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.